Vaguely, I seemed to remember the other persons present and they spoke to me as to an old friend. It was soon apparent, however, that the conversation was for my sole benefit as it was obvious that everyone else exchanged thoughts telepathically. As they did so, iridescent clouds of color about them changed swiftly in shimmering hues and patterns. No servants waited upon the table, yet it was laid out exquisitely with the most delicate plates and shimmering silverware. On each plate were three portions: a triangle portion of pale amber, a square portion of varying shades of green, and a round portion of lavender. The beverage was clear and sparkling in a crystal goblet. These strange delicacies were the most delicious and delicately flavored foods I had ever tasted, and the sparkling drink seemed to give immediate renewed strength and energy. When the splendid meal was finished and everyone was preparing to leave the table, I turned and looked at Lyra. Suddenly, I was fully aware for the first time of all her exquisite feminine beauty and loveliness. Involuntarily, a wave of desire for her swept over me. She turned away from me and all conversation in the room ceased. I glanced hastily about, all of the others were standing silently with bowed heads. On an opposite wall I saw my reflection in a huge mirror and embarrassment flooded over me as I saw an ugly mottled red and black cloud enveloping my head and shoulders. I felt impure and unworthy to be in that shining assemblage. The others left quietly, but I had the comforting feeling of their deep sympathy for me and their understanding for my sudden human weakness. Also, I had the strong telepathic impression that sexual desire is merely another of the erroneous manifestations of materiality. Upon earth it is in itself neither wrong nor sinful except as it is used for selfish or destructive purposes. If motivated by love, altruism and unselfishness, the sexual appetite is no more erroneous than any of mankind's other desires. But in the higher spiritual worlds it is non-existent. Orion touched my arm as we were leaving the hall. "We understand," he said kindly. "It is nothing, as you understand now." I smiled gratefully at him, but I felt tired and very sleepy. He and Lyra accompanied me to my room where I lay down upon the couch. They sat beside me until I fell into a deep sleep. When I awoke I was alone. I walked outside onto the terrace, but the grounds were deserted. For a long while I stood there alone on the balcony marveling at that fantastically beautiful world. Apparently it was a world of eternal youth, eternal spring and eternal day, although the rainbow-hued clouds were always moving overhead shot with soft waves of sheet lightning and the far-away echo of thunder never entirely ceased. The trees, the flowers and the grass were miracles of color, fire and light which in comparison made the remembered counterfeits of earth seem like gross and dull shadows. As I stood there marveling, I saw Lyra come out of the adjoining building. As she called a warm greeting I saw she was holding a small crystal object in her hand. When she joined me she said mysteriously, "This is the seventh earth day, and through ourselves we shall take you back." Her strange, beautiful eyes were upon me seeming to look through and beyond me. She did not address me either as Neptune, or Orpheo. For some unaccountable reason this saddened me, for it made me realize that I was now a stranger and an impostor in their shining world. Understanding my thought, she put her hand gently over mine and I saw a mist of tears in her eyes. Then she raised the odd crystal in her hand to her forehead. As though in magic response, a flood of exquisite melody arose from the sea-green building, not the ethereal music of their world, but a hauntingly familiar strain. As in a dream I recognized the stately melody of Albert Haymalot's musical setting of the Lord's Prayer. Tears flowed unrestrainedly down my cheeks for a half-remembered sad people who dwelt in a strange, shadowed region called Earth. Softly she said, "You will remember this, Orpheo." The name sounded strange upon her lips, like the name of an utter stranger. I bowed my head in bitter regret for Neptune who was, and who now was not. And for the false shadow of Orpheo who is. Confused and perturbed I turned hastily from her and hurried into my room. Somehow I had the feeling that the secret of liberation lay in the mysterious crystal panel near my couch. But as I reached eagerly for the controls on the panel, I felt a gentle restraining hand upon my arm. I turned and looked into Lyra's wonderful eyes shining with sympathy, compassion and purest love. My own heart swiftly responded. Then suddenly, miraculously we were as one being, enfolded in an embrace of the spirit untouched by sensuality or carnality. Intuitively I remembered that this was the embrace of the spirit, shared by all of those in the light of God's love throughout the entire universe. What tragedy, I thought, that I and my lost brothers of Earth know only the counterfeit embrace of desire and animal passion. At that moment Orion came in the door and as he stood transfixed his vibrant love too enfolded us in its pure, golden unselfish light. Our lost brother is home at last, he said softly. After a while Orion and Lyra seated themselves near the strange crystal control panel and I rested upon the lounge. Orion touched a crystal disc and immediately an entire wall of the room opened up into a huge three-dimensional void. The room darkened and I saw within the void a view into outer space. But all of space was shining with light, the stars and suns glowed with a deep reddish glow and only the planets were dark. The scene was focusing upon an unfamiliar part of the heavens. A sun and a number of encircling planets were in view. Then the scene centered upon a single planet in this unknown solar system. It was a smug, sleek planet and apparently as efficient as a billiard ball. But it was exceedingly dark in tone and surrounded with concentric waves of darkness. A tangible vibration or emanation came from it, evil, unpleasant and utterly without inspiration or hope. Approaching this world I saw a glowing red dot with a long, misty tail. The fiery dot seemed irresistibly attracted to the dark world. The two collided in a spectacular fiery display. I felt Lyra's hand upon mine as she whispered, "It is an immutable law of the cosmos that too great a preponderance of evil inevitably brings about self-destruction." The scene shifted to a different part of the universe. Another dark, misty world was in view, although it was not as dark as the first world. And about this world there was a vibrant feeling of life and hope. But again, I saw a fiery red dot approaching and it was evident that this world too was doomed. I shuddered to think what would happen. But then I beheld two tiny dots coming forth from that world to intercept the fiery comet. Intuitively I realized that the dots were remotely controlled by intelligent beings who were concentrating the magnetic impulses of the dots upon the comet. Suddenly the comet apparently exploded, leaving the world unscathed. Once more the scene shifted and focused upon a third world. Obviously, this was an in-between world neither as dark and hopeless as the first, nor yet as light and inspired as the second. To the left of this planet appeared another smaller body. I recognized it as our moon and the planet as Earth. From the Earth planet several tiny spaceships went out to the moon and did not return. Then a tiny fleet of spacecraft went out to the moon but these returned to Earth. Suddenly, terrifyingly, to the right of the planet Earth, appeared the fatalistic, red, fiery dot. Swiftly, it increased in size, leaving behind it a fiery tail of flame. It was evident that the comet was being drawn irresistibly toward Earth. Neither Lyra or Orion spoke, but a strange voice said, "In the time dimension of Earth it is now the year 1986. As I shuddered and waited anxiously, the portentous scene slowly faded from the screen. I turned excitedly to Orion, "But what happens to Earth?" I implored him. Orion and Lyra both looked compassionately at me as Orion gently replied, "That depends entirely upon your brothers of Earth and their progress in unity, understanding and brotherly love during the time period left them between the so-called now and the year 1986. All spiritual help possible will be given to them, not only by ourselves but by others in the universe. We believe that they and their world will be saved, but in no time frame, or dimension, is the future ever written irrevocably. If their planet is destroyed, it means another fall for the entities of Earth into even denser meshes of materiality and unreality. As you love your brothers of Earth, Orfeo, fight to your dying breath to help them toward a world of love, light and unity." With those awful and awesome words, he got up and slowly walked from the room, leaving me alone with Lyra. She smiled gently into my eyes and touched the mysterious crystal panel. Immediately the incredible, huge, three-dimensional screen became active again. But no longer were we looking into the boundless depths of space and time. Instead, I saw the familiar outlines of the Lockheed plant in Burbank. There was the shop in which I worked. Then the scene shifted inside the plant. I, Dave Donegan and Richard Butterfield. I saw the Radoms and my working companions. An unpleasant sensation came over me as though I were fainting, as though I were fading into the huge screen and becoming an active part of the scene I was viewing. Terrified, I turned to call to Lyra, but she was no longer there, only a mist. Then I blacked out. My next conscious perception was my strange awakening on the job at Lockheed, with all of my incredible experiences of those 7 days seemingly utterly obliterated from my mind. Oh, as I lay there beneath the stars that night, it was all suddenly crystal clear to me. My bewildered, frightening awakening upon Earth. My sudden terrible revulsion with everything I saw upon Earth as compared with the wonder world I had left, although as yet only my subconscious mind understood. I remembered my fellow workers, Dave Donegan and Richard Butterfield, and their reactions to my strange behavior and sudden apparently unreasoning outburst. In the greater scope of my new understanding, I realized how nobly they had caught me up and sustained me by their own strength through those critical moments of my awakening. It was so clearly evident to me then that both Dave and Richard had the same basic inherent qualities of goodness and nobility as those godlike beings of that other world. They are both simple, humble men, average workers like myself, and yet potential gods. If only they and others like them knew and could realize their divinity, their kinship with God and the greater world of true reality. If every man and woman upon earth could but grasp the great essential basic truth that we are all one and an integral part of God, more on that, then indeed all of mankind's difficult trials and bitter tribulations would be over. If only in the abstract we could momentarily attain this illumination, the heavy chains of material bondage would fall from our burdened bodies and our counterfeit world of darkness would vanish in true light. Today, I believe with all my heart, soul and body in my brothers of Earth. Because of the innate goodness, honesty, nobility and helpful fellowship of the countless other men and women like Dave Donegan and Richard Butterfield, my undying faith in and love for humanity is forever instilled. Even though our greater brothers of that shining, lost, wonder world should offer to take me back to my former place among them, I should have to refuse. My lot is forever with my fellows of Earth. I will fight courageously with them and for them in the undying belief that the good in our hearts will triumph over the evil, in the conviction that every human being upon earth trapped in eternity and granted only one small awareness at a time, will be liberated from the prison of unreality and attain again his great lost heritage. The end. Text copied from archive.org/details/mysticmagazine061954. More of Paul M. Vestold articles, Venusians Walk Our Streets. By Paul M. Vest, 1954, in Mystic Magazine.